Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Boldly Pursuing Podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Henderson. Here we have conversations with friends who are stepping out and doing what God has called them to do in order to help encourage you to do the same. On today's podcast, we have my friend Nicole Zazowski on her book, What If It's Wonderful. Y'all, if no one else needed this conversation, which I know so many of you are going to be just like me, and you really needed this. This conversation with Nicole was absolutely incredible. It was one of my favorites ever. The tagline of her book is Release Your Fears, Choose Joy, and Find the Courage to Celebrate. I am so excited for y'all to hear this conversation. So here is my chat with Nicole. Nicole, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, it's so fun to be with you, finally.
I know. We were talking about this before I started recording, but I'm so excited for this conversation today. Do you want to start by kind of just introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about you?
Yes, I am a marriage and family therapist. I work in Greenwich, Connecticut, just outside New York City. And I live nearby with my husband and three young kids in a tiny little beach town on the Long Island Sound. And most of the time my work is in, you know, my little office in Connecticut, but sometimes I get to travel and speak and, at churches and organizations around the country. So, that is what my day-to-day looks like, and I've written two books. The first is called From Lost to Found, and the most recent one is called What If It's Wonderful?
Yes, and that's what we're talking about today, is What If It's Wonderful? And we were just talking about this, but just so the audience knows, like, I already told Nicole that if she wrote this book for no one else, she wrote it for me. But I am so excited about this conversation today, because knowing that other people feel like this, like you wrote a whole book about this. And I'm like, I didn't know anyone else felt like this. Aww. I didn't even know I felt like this until I started reading. And I was like, oh, shoot. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be so good. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about the book and what made you want to write What If It's Wonderful?
Yeah, you know, that's probably one of the things that I hear most often, is that I didn't even know I felt like this until I started reading. I think it's a mentality that has become so commonplace, and we've just sort of learned to live with it. But as you know, it's about the courage to celebrate. And some people assume I wrote this book because I had a lot to say about celebration, and hopefully I do now. But but this journey really began out of a season that could largely be characterized by change and loss. And when you go through loss, whether it's the loss of a loved one or a betrayal or just a season looking really different than you hoped it would, there's the loss itself, there's what happened, and then there's the cost. And the cost is the impact to your sense of identity or your sense of safety or security. And what took me a really long time to realize is that a lot of the cost for me of that season was, yes, the loss itself, but also that when I did step into a season that had a little more joy, good news, and breakthrough in our story, I noticed that my joy was accompanied by a lot of fear. It felt easier not to embrace joy at all than to hold something that might break. And I was so sad when I realized one day that, yes, again, I have experienced tangible loss, but a lot of the loss has been my refusal to embrace the beautiful life that's right in front of me. And I was so grieved. I thought, I don't want to miss out on my beautiful God-given life because I'm so busy preparing for the worst. And so that's where I did a deep dive into neuroscience research and biblical study to understand what does scripture and the current research say about celebration and joy, and how do I practice this differently in my everyday life?
So we're looking at this from a faith and a science perspective.
Yes.
So that's interesting to me because I can see now looking in like on the faith side, which we'll talk about that. But what, tell me how science comes in. Like, what is the science saying? Is there a correlation there?
Yes. I was just shocked when I mean, as a therapist, I knew bits and pieces of this. But in my deep dive, I learned so much about how the brain naturally goes. Left on neutral, the brain leans negative. And there's a lot of dynamics happening inside our brains that make this the case. A few of them were really interesting to me. One of them is called the hedonic treadmill, which is basically means it's this phenomenon going on inside our brain that means that our brain rapidly adapts to joy. So you receive that good news or that gift that you thought would make you want for nothing else. And very quickly, the glitter fades off that moment and it fades into the background.
Yeah. yeah, absolutely.
you probably can think of some circumstances where that's the case. And then the second, our brain is just stickier with painful information than joyful information, which is something that we talk about a fair amount. But practically speaking, what that means is that throughout your day, all those moments of delight or connection are not things that your brain thinks it needs to remember. And so because it's so efficient, it's only going to pick up and keep and recall what it thinks it needs, which largely is large and painful things. Another one that I found so interesting is that we all have this tendency to tell our joy how it can be improved upon. So I always give the example of, say, you give a presentation and you feel really great about your delivery and you're getting smiles and nods from the audience. You can tell you're connecting. Maybe you get a few compliments on your way back to your seat and you sit down and you feel so good and satisfied. And then you think, oh, it would have been better if I shared that story. Or they said I was a good speaker, but they didn't say I was a great speaker. Or, you know, yeah. We start telling our joy what would have made it better. And we do this with family vacations or, you know, really anything. And we don't tend to savor. And so the last third of my book actually is filled with practices that are available to all of us, no matter what kind of season you feel like this is for you. And they're all ways of sort of counteracting what's naturally going on in the brain, because all we need to do to not celebrate or to feel less joyful is nothing. And so it actually takes quite a bit of intention to create new neural pathways toward joy.
Okay. Wow. That's interesting.
Yes.
Okay. So you said something in here. We were talking about when life gets hard or when tragedy strikes or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Christians, we're kind of taught we go to God in our suffering, mm-hmm. and that He feels so near in our suffering. And then we talk about, but what about when life is great? And you even say, what about when miracles do happen? And I want to go a step further. So we had an experience about 4 years ago where we got a literal miracle with our son. They thought mm-hmm. he had leukemia. He had been sick for a couple of years. We flew him all over the country to the Mayo Clinic. And finally they said, we think it's leukemia. We're going to do a bone marrow biopsy. And the oncologist had been like, this, like, be prepared to hear that this is what he has. And our pediatrician called me that night from her cell phone at like 10 p.m. And she said, Caitlin, you're not going to believe this. Mm. His bone marrow looked like someone that had leukemia, had already been through chemo and was healing. And our pediatrician had to argue with the oncologist that our son had never received chemo. And after that, he just got better. And all the doctors, like everyone on the case was like, we have no explanation for this. And our pediatrician was a Christian. And she was like, this is a miracle. Like, I've seen miracles in my day. But the interesting thing is I have found myself hesitant to share that story because it's almost like miracle guilt. Mm-hmm. Like not everyone gets that miracle. Mm-hmm. So can you like talk about that? Like what happens when we do get the miracle? Because we should be celebrating God mm-hmm. for that. And, you know, we were, and we were so thankful, but I don't know, reading through this, it is hard. Like,
yes,
it's easy to go to him in our suffering.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy. And then when we do get the miracle or when something great mm-hmm. does happen. So will you touch on that a little?
Yes. And gosh, I just had chills the entire time you were talking. I praise God. That is indeed something that we need to celebrate. And so there are two different chapters from my book that come to mind as you're talking, and actually that touch on two different hesitancies that I would say are two of the maybe top five reasons that we're hesitant to celebrate. One I certainly felt is I had a totally different relationship with God in the dark. I knew where he was. I could feel his breath on my face. He was so close. And it was one of the reasons I was hesitant to step into the light of my joy is because I was sad, having grown up in the church my whole life, I didn't know what it looked like to engage with God authentically and deeply in my joy. Mm-hmm. And there was one Bible story that was really helpful in understanding this. And it's actually the story of the 10 lepers who are healed. And if you're not familiar with the story, they're standing on the side of the road and they see Jesus coming. And as you know, leprosy was not merely a physical disease, although it was quite severe physically. It meant being a social outcast. And they had nothing to lose by crying out to Jesus and saying, "Save us." And he tells them, "Be on your way to the temple," which is the first step that one took after being healed. So they had to have faith that they would be healed on their way. And sure enough, they see their own healing in the faces and bodies of their friends. And the Bible doesn't say this, but we can assume, given the huge life change that that would be, that they all felt grateful, mm-hmm. that they all were celebrating to some degree. But as the story goes, only one returned to thank Jesus. And I had always read this when Jesus said, "Well, weren't all 10 healed?" I always read that as Jesus kind of giving a bid for our praise. And what I realized in my study of this story is that thanksgiving, actually expressing the gratitude that we feel, is our way of celebrating the gift with the giver. It's our way of connecting with God or with somebody else, actually verbalizing, saying that gratitude that we feel through thanksgiving is actually a celebration. It's a way of celebrating the gift with the giver. And so thanksgiving has been one of my favorite ways of connecting with God deeply in my celebration. I think you also touched on, what does this look like in community? And I have a similar, a very different story than you, but similar in that I am so keenly aware that the miracles and breakthrough in my story are not how everyone's story ends. Mm-hmm. And I want to be sensitive. I want to be kind. And I think, you know, I look at that verse, "Rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn," that Paul instructs the Romans in. And I think we get into trouble and it's isolating when we either mourn or we celebrate without the awareness that the other reality exists. So you're already halfway there in just being aware that, okay, this is not how everyone's story ends. How can I fully embrace this gift and celebrate it and be aware that there are others who are still in the thick of it and maybe whose story will end differently? And I think in terms of celebrating other people, we can talk about what that looks like. But I think when you are the one celebrating, knowing that it's a gift of grace. You know, I talk about David in the book when he's going, the Ark of the Covenant is brought in, and he is just, I mean, the Bible does not shy away from the description of his exuberant celebration. Yeah. And Michal, Saul's daughter, is looking upon him like, this is so inappropriate. And yet David isn't celebrating to draw attention to himself, which is, I think we can sometimes worry that celebration is doing that, particularly when it's around mm-hmm. an accomplishment maybe, or an achievement, maybe not as much healing, but, you know, something that we've worked hard for. We're hesitant to celebrate, but I think I had to look honestly at my own life and say, oh, actually, when I'm hesitant to celebrate, it's a sign that I've actually made that thing about me. And when I recognize that it's a gift of grace from God, I celebrate freely, because He has gifted me. He has allowed these opportunities to come my way and given me this opportunity to use the gifts that He gave me. And I would say, while a little bit different, you know, healing, this is a gift of grace from God. All credit be to Him, and let's celebrate that gift freely.
Yeah, that just made me think. Someone, I cannot remember who it was, but I heard someone talking on Instagram a few days ago kind of about this, but they were talking about how suffering, a life of only suffering and only sharing the hardest parts of our story mm-hmm. isn't attractive when we're trying to bring people to Jesus. Mm-hmm. Like when we're only sharing, like we're suffering for the gospel, or like we're, you know, like that doesn't necessarily make people want to be like, well, I want to come to Jesus so I can suffer the rest of my life, you know, like, but they were talking about, you know, we should be sharing the great things that God does in our lives too, because it, you know, people are looking at us, and when they only see like, wow, she gave her life to Christ, and then it just went all downhill from there, like no good, no miracles, no grace, you know?
Yeah.
So it made me think of that, because I'm like, well, yeah, that makes sense for outside people looking in.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be like, well, why would I want that? You know,
awful. I think that's spot on. Our authenticity in both our pain and our joy is so important. You know, Revelation, it says, we will conquer by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. Mm-hmm. We need to be sharing, yes, our stories of sorrow and how God is moving through even the dark places, but we also need to share about our celebration and how God, His victory in our lives. And both are true. One does not cancel the other. That's toxic positivity, where mm-hmm. we expect joy and goodness to cancel what is hard. And instead of just holding both, both are true.
Hey friends, interrupting this conversation for just a quick second to tell you about something that I am literally obsessed with. So I think it's very clear I have an entrepreneurial spirit, and I was really noticing that all of my kids are kind of the same way. I stumbled upon this company called Boss Club. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. I had not. I bought this self-guided course with my own money. This is not sponsored. I am just that obsessed. I bought this course for kids. And it says it's our fast track startup system that has over 100 videos walking you through steps A through Z of the business creation and launch process. We'll help you come up with, launch, and run your very own business idea and make real sales. Listen, we went through like the very first two or three videos, and I was immediately obsessed with this course. So they also have a Christian faith-based aspect that you can incorporate, which I chose to do. So not only is it teaching my kids like things in business that I don't even know, like There is just so many aspects. This is a really deep dive into everything your kids need to know to launch a business, but it's also teaching them like biblical aspects. So like one thing that really stood out to me was he was telling the kids, he said, don't think that you just have to be a pastor or a missionary to have an impact on the kingdom of God. Like where your heart is for running a business, like you can still do so much good in the world and for God's kingdom. And that's the type of stuff that is just embedded through this whole course. I'm going to be honest, we're only a quarter of the way through this entire course, but I am so obsessed that I had to tell you guys about it. So I reached out to them and I actually got a 10% off code for you guys. So if you go to bossclub.com and you can choose from any of the courses that they have, if you use the coupon code BOLDLY in all caps, it should give you 10% off. The course that we got was the self-guided course. I think it was $297, worth every single penny. Like if you have kids that are interested in being entrepreneurs whatsoever, or honestly, even if they are not, this feels like one of the most valuable things I have ever done for my kids. And I was like, I have to tell everyone I know about this because I feel like this is literally going to change my kids' future and their success. And we are getting foundation set right now. Now it does say that the course is for like, I think 11 to 17 year olds. And my oldest is only 10 and my youngest is 5. So we are going through it all of us together, talking about every video. But I got to tell you, all three of my kids are really interested in it and picking up on basically everything. Like there's some things that my 5 year old, it's kind of going over her head. But for the most part, my kids are so intrigued. They already have their business idea. They've made all the financial decisions. They know what their profit margin needs to be. They know what their input costs are. Like it's just crazy. So I had to tell you guys about it. So I will put a link in the show notes below or just go to bossclub.com and use the coupon code BOLDLY in all caps. All right, now back to our conversation. So do you think that at the root of all of this is fear? Like fear that if we celebrate, it'll be ripped from us, or mm-hmm. you know, is it a self-defense mechanism of if I don't feel joy in the first place, whenever it's taken from me, it won't hurt as bad?
Yeah,
I mean, I think I feel that.
Yes. No, I would say I mentioned that there are 5 hesitancies to celebrate that seem to come up over and over again. I would say that is the one I hear most often is a profound fear. And then we try to control and manage that vulnerability of joy with pessimism and cynicism. Mm-hmm. Always preparing for the worst case scenario, keeping our pulse on what, you know, the negative outcome could be, practicing disappointment, rehearsing disaster. That's all control.
Oh man. My toes are so stepped on right now. I'm like the scenarios I run through in my mind of, you know, cause it's if you picture the worst case scenario and then it happens, it's like you've already lived it. And so I'm sure you probably know about this. Me and my sister were just having this conversation a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And she told me she read an article that said, when we do that, our bodies are actually being damaged because we're giving ourselves trauma just by thinking of that scenario. Is that accurate?
I would say so. I would have to look at the study, but I believe it based on what I've researched. Yeah, it makes total sense and certainly fits with the research and the, you know, the research from my counseling couch. I've seen that not only in my own life, I've certainly experienced it firsthand, but also the stories that are very different than mine, but the same phenomenon pops up. And here's the sad thing. It doesn't reduce the pain at all if that thing were to happen. So that scenario that we fear, even if it were to happen. And I think we practice a lot of disappointment and despair that does not. So then that's just wasted sadness because it never actually comes to pass. But if it does happen, we are going to be no less disappointed or no less sad because we have rehearsed it in our minds. What it will protect us from is a lot of delight and connection, because think about where your eyes look. If you're always looking down, prepared for the worst case, hypervigilant for anything that could go wrong, you're not looking up at what actually is happening. And the goodness that God is weaving in your days, every day. We can't look in both places at once.
Wow. This is why I was so excited for this conversation, because I'm like, it's just, wow, all of it. So, okay, then say you and me are not the only ones that have dealt with this. I'm sure we're not. And I'm sure so many people listening are like, oh, wow, okay. Where do we start? I mean, because I've been doing this for years. I'm great at this. I'm great at this cynicism.
So I know.
Like, help me. Where do we start?
Yes. So as I mentioned, that last third of the book, the last section called Finding the Courage to Celebrate is very practical. I continue in biblical story and personal narrative, but here's where we start practicing, because what I learned is that rather than a reaction to good news or a reward for an accomplishment, that's how we tend to think of celebration. Celebration is more of a rhythm that helps us experience more joy in the lives we're already living. We tend to see our joy sitting on the other side of some sort of change, a dream realized, a goal accomplished, you know, a shift in our circumstances. But it's actually a practice that helps us cultivate more joy now. And so that last third is all practices, if you're curious about this question, but I'd love to talk about my favorite one. It's a good on-ramp. And I practice this almost every day, maybe multiple times a day. And it has really helped me. It's called savoring. And the way that you savor is you just ask your five traditional senses what they're going to remember about a moment. So, and I want that moment tiny. It can be big, but most of the time in our everyday lives, it might be, you know, for me, it's the sun catching my son's blonde hair as he plays in the backyard, or it's the weight of my daughter on, my chest as I rock her to sleep. You know, it's moments that are happening all the time. Again, that our brain does not think are important, but we're telling our brain it's important. So you just ask, you take that snapshot and you just say, what do I see? What do I hear? What do I smell? What do I taste? And what do I feel? And that savors that moment, celebrates it in a way that puts it in a different place in your brain so that you can actually recall it later. And the beautiful thing is this gets easier. So you tend to find what you look for. Right. And if this becomes a habit in your life, all of a sudden your eyes start having more of a vision for these moments of goodness that you are more inclined to celebrate than simply discarding them as unimportant like your brain would naturally do.
So this almost seems, would you classify this as like a spiritual discipline?
Yes.
Okay.
I would.
Okay.
I would. It is absolutely. And at first, Caitlin, I was so annoyed when I decided that celebration was a discipline because I thought, gosh, can't this be the thing that comes easily and naturally? And I think we so want to feel like doing something before we do it. I would say that's, regardless of the situation, that's probably the number one pushback I get as a therapist when we're moving toward change is like, I know that's true, but I don't feel it.
Yeah.
And here's, it's probably my least favorite thing about the brain, one of them. Often, sometimes we get to act based on our feelings. Like we just have this rush of thrill and then we feel like doing something and we do it. Often the feelings actually follow the practice or the action. And so this discipline is what helps us experience more joy in the lives we're already living. And I realized, though, as annoyed as I was at first, how empowering that is. I'm a person who used to come into a new season, like New Year's is a great example. I mean, I would be so anxious with all this talk of goal setting and vision casting and dreaming. I would just think, what if it doesn't happen? What if I'm disappointed?
Yes. Or
I'd walk into a new season and think, well, I hope I have a reason to celebrate. And that is another top hesitation to celebrate, is that we're waiting for a reason. But then I realized, my goodness, this is so empowering to celebrate as a practice because it's available to me right now. I don't have to wait for a quote unquote reason. I have a reason already. And I just need to go through the discipline of practicing it in the life I already have. And it has increased my joy. It's also decreased my anxiety because I am so present. You know, that pessimism has us running ahead to the future for all those worst case scenarios, or rehearsing something and rewriting history of what we could have, should have, would have done differently. You know, neither of which are helpful and both increase anxiety. But this savoring practice, for example, just keeps us so present, which automatically reduces our anxiousness.
And going back to what you said about looking for a reason to celebrate, I think when we do that, no reason's big enough.
Like, nope. You're absolutely right.
I mean, you can get the exact thing you hoped for. And then, like, okay, so for example, like when I got my book deal, like I thought my life was made. I've peaked. This is, you know. And then like a day later, you're like, well, the book's not going to sell.
The glitter has started to flake
off. Yeah, you're like, well, the book's not even going to sell. I got a book deal, but you know, it's going to flop. And it just feels like no reason is big enough. And so that celebration is so, it's almost bitter, because when you celebrate, you know, like, I think our brains know that that celebration isn't going to last. So then it's almost like, why am I even celebrating in the first place? Like, just cut it out altogether.
Yeah, no, it's a mirage. When we limit our celebration to that reason, you're right, because of our brain's tendency to tell our joy how it can be improved upon. But also, you know, when I had to look at disappointment a lot in writing this book, just because that so naturally is paired with celebration. And when I looked at the experience of disappointment, and did an honest reflection on my own life and the times that I have felt disappointed, some of it's been because of a no or missed expectations, but a lot of it has been because I've expected more joy from the gift than it was meant to give. I just, you know, what sits at the center of our affection will determine the satiation of my joy. And I have absolutely put book deals, children, you know, these are good things. These are gifts from God. No question. No one would question us celebrating those things. But if they're too close to the center of our affection, and if we're expecting more joy from them than they were meant to give, we are going to feel that. And that's where we say, of course, the only gift that belongs at the center is the person and presence of Jesus. And there were a lot of gifts, and still are, standing awkwardly in the wrong position in my heart. And I have, talk about a daily discipline, I got to move those gifts off center. Because it will rob me of joy if they're standing too close to the middle.
I've said before that I think it's easy for us sometimes to focus more on the things God has called us to than God himself. Like, because it's such a good thing. Like you were saying, like, God called us here, or he gave us this gift. And then when our whole focus goes there, it's such a slippery slope. But okay, so we are really good as Christians is going, at going to God in our suffering, in our mourning, and just sitting with Him in that, how do we bring Jesus into our celebrations? Like, how do we merge that?
Yeah, I would say Thanksgiving is probably my favorite practice in doing that, both with other people and with God in my prayers. But also, just how do we picture Him? One of my favorite diagnostic questions, I talk about this in the book, when I'm working with a client who I know is a Christian, a Christ follower, I will sometimes ask, you know, if Jesus walked into the room, where are you and where is Jesus? And it's an interesting question to ask specifically in light of our celebration. Because when I've asked that question in a situation of joy, usually we picture, the answer I've gotten most often is Jesus is not at the center of our celebration, that He's a bit of a wallflower sort of waiting for us to call Him when we need Him.
Yeah.
That we don't really picture Him engaged in our delight. We tend to think of Him really close as He walks us over ground that's uneven, and we're sort of leaning on Him in that place. And then when we get to ground that's soft underfoot, Him saying something like, okay, have fun. You let me know when you need me again. Mm-hmm. Most of us just don't really picture Him in the room in our joy. And when I looked at scripture, I thought, okay, celebration bookends both the Bible in creation and in Revelation. We are promised that there will be no more tears, that celebration is the end of the story. And it also bookends Jesus's life. You know, the angels rejoicing, the shepherds rushing, the wise men bringing lavish mm-hmm. gifts. And then of course His resurrection, conquering death. Jesus is, celebration is essential to His character and central to His mission. Why would we not include Him in our beach bonfires? I talk about this in the book, you know, when we, let's start picturing Him, you know, slapping His knee in laughter in response to us saying something funny yeah. or delighting in His creation together, celebrating the gift with the giver by thanking Him, you know, just engaging Him in our imagery more often. And so that, to anyone listening, that would be my first question is where is Jesus in the room in the light of your joy?
That's good. That gave me goosebumps, like thinking about like when mm-hmm. you said like slapping His knee and laughing with us, like
yeah,
joyful to be there.
I had a client. Yes. I had a client whose dad had a pencil drawing of a laughing Jesus in his office. And it caught her attention and mine when she told me about it, because that is so different than the picture we typically mm-hmm. have of Jesus. We might have Him with a soft smile or, you know, but that exuberant belly laughter is just so part of Him
yeah.
and yet not what we typically talk about or picture Him.
No,
as.
That's beautiful though. Okay. The last thing I want you to touch on, you talk a little bit about the difference between celebration and escape. So do you want to touch on that?
Yes. Again, I think celebration can be misbranded as something that takes us away from emotional depth or a connection with other people and with God. You know, when we think of a wild party or just blowing off steam. And really, a more helpful question, you know, sometimes I'm asked, well, what's celebration and what's escapism, like from a behavioral mm-hmm. perspective? And with a few obvious examples, I may not be able to tell what one is doing if I was, you know, a fly on the wall watching somebody celebrate. The better question is, what am I looking for in engaging in this behavior? because escapism is a reaction to pain that looks to numb and take us away, to disconnect from our emotional experience, God and other people. Mm-hmm. Celebration is a discipline. It's an action based on truth that actually connects us more deeply with our emotional experience and other people and God. And so it's, again, with a few obvious exceptions, it's less about the behavior and more about the emotional experience that's driving it.
Okay. That is good. All right, Nicole, this has just been so good. Is there anything else you want to share with people or that you want to make sure people walk away with after they read this book?
Yeah. You know, there's, if there's anyone listening that's just saying, gosh, this sounds great, but I'm not in a season that feels very celebratory and, or I've been through so much, it's just so hard to find that courage to celebrate. I just want to comfort you with, the story in Luke 1, where Elizabeth and Zechariah have been walking through infertility for years. And they get this news that they're going to have a son, John the Baptist. And we see a real interesting contrast. Elizabeth readily receives that news with joy. She does not let that pain keep her from the joy of the promise. And she's my model. but I'll raise my hand here and say I probably fall more towards Zechariah a lot of the time. It's so hard to trust the promise when you've known so much pain. And yes, he was silenced for a period of time because he did not believe what the angel had told him, but he still receives the gift. And I just want to make sure that we rest in the fact that God's faithfulness to us and his blessing does not depend on our faith. That both Elizabeth and Zechariah got to enjoy that gift. They're simply so much joy to be had, as Elizabeth says at the end of that chapter, you know, blessed is she who has believed what God has promised her. And it's just a gift to us to have an expectant heart and take God at his word. But his faithfulness to us does not depend on our faith.
Man, what a good word to end with. That's so good. Okay. Well, tell everyone, where can they connect with you online and where can they go get the book?
Yes, you can buy the book anywhere you like to buy books. Of course, it's on Amazon and your local bookstore can order it for you if they don't have it. I love connecting with listeners and readers, so please reach out. My website is a great place to do that, NicoleZaskowski.com, ZASOWSKI.com. And there's actually a lot of free bonuses still available that go along with the book, including, you know, those table topic cards with fun questions on them, printable versions of those for your celebration gatherings, or just your family. Very fun. They're beautifully designed and, so lots of fun goodies like that. And then Instagram is the social media platform I hang out the most, and I'm just at Nicole Zaskowski there.
Hey friends, I hope you loved this episode of the Boldly Pursuing podcast. And if you have a minute, would you do us a huge favor and head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and a review? That is so helpful for helping new people find the podcast, and we would so appreciate it. Hey friends, until next time, keep boldly pursuing.